Hey everyone, it's Noor. Welcome to our second season of Ad Tech Unfiltered. We want to start off the new year focusing on a question I imagine anyone listening to the podcast might sometimes be asking themselves. Whether you're an ad buyer yourself, you oversee a buying team, you're invested in the outcomes of your organization's media campaigns, you've likely asked yourself, are we buying this media the best way possible? And how good of a job are we doing buying media programmatically? For valuable input on the topic, I spoke to Luke Lambert. He's the head of programmatic at OMD. OMD has retained its title as the world's largest media agency, securing the top spot with projected billings of nearly $20 billion last year. Luke and I discuss how OMD's work for many of the world's largest brands and advertisers is organized, the importance of investing client dollars intelligently, how to stay educated, knowing how to turn to internal resources, and ultimately keep your clients happy. All that and more on how to be the best programmatic buyer with Luke Lambert starts right now. Luke, appreciate you making time to chat today.
I'm very happy to be here.
Absolutely. And I know it's been a minute since I've seen you in these offices. Does it feel familiar to you?
Yeah, I walked in, saw somebody at the front desk that I thought I recognized, but I definitely don't know her. And I just started walking to the coffee.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, you can get coffee.
Yeah. And you're like, oh, I see that you know where to get the coffee.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I know we're specifically here today to chat about not just programmatic, but particularly how clients are thinking about programmatic from an investment perspective and why even calling it investment is important as well. So let's start up and talk about your role, which I was just looking at on LinkedIn. It's called Head of Programmatic. Is that the official title? Is that what we call you?
That is the official title for now, yeah.
Okay. So what does one do as the head of programmatic at OMD?
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe it's not interesting because the analogy I'm going to make is going to prove that it's not interesting to be the head of programmatic. It's like being the head of IOs, right? It actually is a way at this point, not a what. So leading a way without it being like the well-rounded practice that we all know it is starts to feel a little bit disjointed. But my day-to-day really consists of building out what we consider to be the best programmatic product in the world. And that consists of people who trade, which we should probably talk about why the word trading is bad as well, but people who are hands on keyboard in console, people who are experienced in the ways of programmatic and the capabilities of it, and ultimately working with our client roster to ensure that they know all the great things that my team can do.
How many people at Omnicom, at least under the division, that the extent of the division or the scope of the division that you are overseeing, how many people work on that team that you're aware of?
Yeah, that I'm aware of. Hopefully all of them I'm aware of. But we've gone through a serious set of reorganizations. When I initially joined Omnicom, we were a company called Acuin. And this is where the word trading desk for me is a little bit gross, because a good trader buys low and sells high, which is not a good investor for our clients, at least not worth selling to them, if you will. So Acuin became a dedicated team inside of the brand agencies, so Hearts and Science, PhD, and OMD, which is where I work. And at that point, OMD Programmatic was born, and the whole plan there was to get as much insight and information out of the media that programmatic promises and delivers into the planning process. And ultimately, that's really where we've landed today. So there are roughly 150 programmatic people inside of OMD USA. And some of them are dedicated to specific accounts, some of them lead regions, and some of them are full-on programmatic product-type people.
Okay. So there's a lot of variation in terms of the different types of roles that people are taking on from a programmatic perspective, and it sounds like you're sitting on top of it all. What are your responsibilities sitting on the top of all of that?
Mostly podcasts.
Okay. And great. You're at the right place.
And occasionally wearing like my janitor hat. There's a lot of cleanup, if you will, in my role, like what I actually spend my time doing, which I get a ton of pleasure out of. Like, I love spending time with our clients, getting them to kind of reset on what programmatic is, because it's been a fast transition. When I joined 3.5 years ago, it was still, like I mentioned, at arm's length and IO away from the planning process.
So as it relates to
programmatic changing very quickly. How, when you first showed up in this leadership role, and I know there's been some shifts in terms of maybe what you're doing today by comparison to what you were doing in the past, but how have you seen programmatic change, or what did you see it to be, let's say, 3 years ago?
What did I think programmatic was 3 years ago?
Yeah, what was your perception? And or if you even talk to a client, I'd say that this is probably our first podcast where we're talking very specifically and exclusively about programmatic. So it might even make sense to say, I imagine some of your clients, when you spoke to them, weren't even overly or perfectly familiar with what programmatic was. So what was the perception of what programmatic was and why it was needed to, or why there needed to be a specific team that's cultivating media buying around that?
Yeah, so programmatic, I would say, was a capital P. It was a what, and most of our clients saw it as a thing you buy. And that was probably an output from the various DSPs in the landscape, and ultimately a build from the ad network days where you bought that thing to do that other thing. And there became this really unfortunate perception of programmatic being non-premium, non-transparent, performance only, and limited to those performance only type KPIs. Whereas today it's a little p, it's programmatically, it's an adverb, it's a descriptor of the way in which we go to market to buy all sorts of inventory. There really isn't anything that can't be bought programmatically at this point, or at least planned in some sort of programmatic fashion. The other piece is there was a lot of misunderstanding on how much work went into it. The idea that it's AI or algorithmic only, and it's set it and forget it, and that's the sort of concept that most of our clients had years ago. Today, I feel like we have a very smart roster of clients and some really smart people, obviously, inside of OMD that really help educate everybody on why it's a way in which we buy.
Another thing that's super important to touch on is referring to programmatic not as something that you buy, like you've mentioned, but it's something that needs to be invested in, and that there's many different ways at which you can approach that investment. So when you're talking to clients, why is it important to square it up as a type of investment as opposed to media buying?
Yeah, so investment year over year should be better, right? We want things to do more with either you get more for the same amount of money, or you spend less and get the same thing. That's the first like form of it with like a savings type goal. But investment is the right word. And for a while, I didn't think it was, because I didn't really understand why we were using it. Yeah. But investment really is a way of saying, look, you're giving me a lot of money, and it's my job to make sure that I do everything I can to make sure you get more back from that money, right? A penny in, two penny out kind of scenario, or a dollar in, a dollar one out, if you will, is probably more realistic. But that's the measurable stuff, right? There's all these things that are kind of inherent to media and marketing that are not measured in the form of investment, which, you know, we can probably get better at.
Given what you were stating earlier, as far as we're buying things programmatically, but programmatic can't just quickly be qualified as performance-driven, non-premium. It can be a lot of other things, and you can essentially buy every type of media programmatically today. How do you get them educated on what they should expect so that when they do start running these buys, their expectations align with realistic expectation?
Well, I think it's about owning that expectation and having a voice at the table before we even start spending the money. I call them vanity KPIs because that's really all they were. It was like, make me feel good about this spend with this wonderful performance, air quote, thing that's happening. But when we really started to look at our job, we're more than just like a marketing or media partner. You know, when we think about what our clients, our senior most clients, are spending their day doing, yes, they're focused on marketing, but they probably have that meeting once a week at that round table with a COO and a CEO and a CFO, and they're all talking about how they need to pull their own weight and make their business do better. And so we see ourselves as an extension of that table these days, not just of the marketing table, to say, okay, what can we measure that can prove valuable for your business? And let's start with that. Like, what are we really tasked with doing? Is it getting more people physically to change and do something for you? Is it a purchase? Is it a certain number of purchases at a certain value? There's just so much more that we could be discussing and talking about when a vanity KPI isn't on the table. We're not starting with it, I should say. So aligning everything we do to a business outcome is first and foremost.
At the holding company level, there are hundreds and hundreds of people, and there are people who are on other types of investment teams and people who work on client-specific business. And this is what I felt when I was on the holding company side. You don't even always understand all the resources you technically had available to you, and there's a good chance that a lot of people work at that holding company, and there are a lot of people they could have turned to that they never turned to. So in an ideal situation, how are you educating people internally to turn to you, and what kind of obligation is there for you to go out and reach out to other people to make sure they're taking advantage of your services or the knowledge you have to share?
Yeah, guilty. I as well still struggle with knowing exactly what resources I have at my disposal. I found a book when I first started working for Omnicom. It was like a phone book of agencies inside of OMC. And it was about this thick, so yeah. 2 or 3 inches thick, and just, you know, type 8 font. And there's so much that gets done inside of a holding company. But when we think about just OMG, and even just inside of OMD, there's the functions that live at OMD, right? So comms planning, cross-media planning, cross-media investment, video investment, et cetera. And then there are the ancillary or satellite type groups that are also inside of OMG that we lean on as well, right? So we have a local buying team, we have an out-of-home team, we have like all these different teams.
And all these teams can reach out to you if they are looking for programmatic expertise.
Yeah. Yeah, and vice versa. So we have a really great kind of open dialogue across the org that says, let's get together once a week and talk about how we should be investing better, and ultimately just like showing up to that stuff. You'd think is really easy, but it's actually hard. It's hard to show up with intent as well, and to actually like raise your voice and say, I'm here for this reason and I have an opinion. Which took, I think it takes everyone a while to get used to the idea that if you're at the table, if you're in the room, you probably should be saying something and not just being there like a lump on a log. So, you know, we're just proactive about it. And we try and make sure that we're hosting meetings once a week to train and educate. We have guest speakers come in. We have guest groups come in. We lean heavily on our vendors as well. And vendors probably the wrong word. Like we lean heavily on our partners because we know we can't do it without them.
Going back to a point you mentioned a little bit earlier and we've discussed very lightly, is that you can buy basically every type of media programmatically now. So with that in mind, knowing that there are other teams that are specialized in types of buying, where do you draw the line to distinguish and decide when you should be buying something programmatically versus when you can buy it direct, or however you want to describe that?
If it can be bought programmatically, it should be bought programmatically. LY. Right. So if there's a way of creating some level of automation, whether that's running through a DSP or not, we should be doing that. Now, we have our own platform that I would say is a programmatic platform. It is an automated process for doing a lot of things like audience creation and channel planning and insight building and investment and et cetera, et cetera. You get the idea. I would put all of that in like the programmatic lens. But if it can't be done, it can't be done for a reason. And a lot of that is like custom work, right? So I can't necessarily build reskins and takeovers of a very specific page, or it's content. And we have a partnership that says, not only are you going to be able to run this type of ad unit, and you can do that programmatically, but we're going to write this for you. Or we're going to create this kind of creative imagery for you. Or maybe it's not something that would ever be bought like that, right? So your out-of-home billboard that's not digital, right? That has to be bought. Direct, or at least today it does.
Knowing that there are probably a lot of different buying teams that could turn to you, do they always make sure to do that in terms of buying programmatically through your team as opposed to just buying it themselves? Like how does that work? If I am working on some specific client account, what would the steps be for me to turn to your team? Like, is there a workflow process in order for me to get you into the loop so that programmatic buying is being done on behalf of the client that I work for?
Yeah, that goes back to like embedding the team and being part of the team. Every single client we have that we buy digital media for, and even those that we don't, still have programmatic people dedicated to that business. So there is no turning to the team and asking when you can come in. There's no arm's length away type of process. It really is a unified process, which took us a while to get to it, but we're there, and it's kind of only getting better, which keeps me happy and keeps me wanting to work and show up every day.
Is there any distinction between a team that buys digital and then, and by digital I mean a non-programmatic team that buys digital media? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, I'm doing a lot of direct buying.
Yes. Yeah. So expertise is something we'll never walk away from, right? If it's there and it's available, we probably want to have someone who knows how to do that really, really well. So we definitely have those people still. And I think digital is probably going to be the next dead word. Right. It'll be the next thing that we just don't say anymore.
Absolutely.
As programmatic becomes a way in which we do things, there won't be a need to delineate between digital and quote-unquote traditional.
Are there any unexpected places that you are now able to buy programmatically that maybe in the near past you weren't able to buy traditional types of media?
Yeah. So I mentioned the launch of that video training that I was doing in New York this week, and I was looking at the content for it today, and one of the questions was around buying print programmatically.
Yeah.
And I had like this reaction of, what are you talking about? Like, that's not doable. But transactionally, yeah, absolutely it is. So that's not the one to answer your question. I think when I look at the out-of-home space in particular, like, that's really, really interesting to me. Not only seeing globally where it's at, like the footprint elsewhere is a little bit better than it is in the US, and audio in particular, like Australia's audio programming capabilities are better than ours. We really have, you know, the ability to buy and plan for traditional broadcast audio, right? Radio, but the automated insertion is not as, real time as I think people expect it to be, versus like the Spotify's and Pandora's of the world where it absolutely is.
Have you needed to make changes internally so that you can buy traditional media programmatically?
Yes. Yeah. So I won't go back to like the integration piece again, but there are pieces that still need to be integrated. Our traditional video investment, right, a television investment, is the majority of our dollars, because it's got the greatest reach and it is the easiest to consume and everyone loves video. That I think is still like the process piece that we're working through, is how to work across these things as more and more of that eyeball time spends inside of those available spaces right now, right? So there's I think 30% of the video inventory available could be bought programmatically, but about 3% of the investment is there. Right. So there's a huge delta between what's available and what's actually being done about it. And I think that is a bit of a symptom of legacy past ways of working. So we're trying to instill process really and connectivity between people and ideas. Less about org charts and more about organization.
Are there tasks that still can't be automated in terms of you can't bring efficiency to them yet just because of the nature with which some of those traditional media types are being bought? Because let me give you an example, like in the television space, right? Oftentimes people are doing negotiations through the new fronts or the upfronts, and you are having a conversation on a program by program basis. And it is just so much more manual in nature. Everything can't be automated. There isn't an exchange that you can tap into as easily to buy that or guarantee that in a programmatic world. So are there any shifts that you guys have seen where there has been new automation brought to things that maybe in the near past you haven't been able to?
Candidly, not really.
Okay, which makes sense. But I think like for a major holding company, if anyone might be looking into that, my imagination would be that you might.
So we've done it on like internally with our own platform. There's a bit of that to it. I think the nuance is upfronts are still a really good thing. It is in our best interest to make commitments early and get that space. Curation is at the core of our programmatic offering, is showing up again with intent, like we do those meetings. Showing up with intent to those digital placements is no different than the way we show up with intent at an upfront and say, like, this is where we should be buying because it makes really great sense for our client.
How does that curation apply to other spaces? Because I think anyone who's listening, if they have bought television or they're familiar with the TV buying process, the upfronts is a somewhat familiar concept. But curating with, let's say, other types of, again, and I know it might be antiquated in a near future, but digital media is something that Is it just as simple as saying, I'm going to work with these partners and I'm going to have them come and talk to us? Like, how do you go about curating? Obviously, every publisher and or partner and or vendor, whatever you want to call them, wants to work with Omnicom. How do you lean in so you can start to curate when maybe hundreds, if not thousands of publishers want to all work with you?
Yeah, so it's an unpackable question for sure. On the basis of it, it's audience everything. I don't like the term audience-based buying, but audience as like the foundation for everything we're doing. And when I say audience, I really mean people. I don't really mean data. I don't mean some like amorphous segmentation.
How are you separating people versus data?
Identity. We want to plan with the same exact person in mind that we're going to ultimately activate against and invest against.
Can you define identity for me?
Yeah, I need to have a very specific way of saying that this user is this user, and here are all the attributes of that user. Whereas in the past, it was this person looks like this person, so we're going to put them into the same bucket and say they're both, you know, they love these types of cars, right? And it's really not about getting away from broad demography either, because there's definitely a place for reach and frequency across all of the world that would buy our product.
Is there a way you would describe what an audience would be versus what an identity would be?
Yeah, I would say an audience is that leverage of data that you don't own, right? It's a lot of brokered segmentation. There's not as much transparency as you would like. I would say that third-party data in particular was the most egregious, where the transparency is so very limited. If you look at the back of a candy bar, right, you can see the nutrition label, and you know the calories, and you know the ingredients, but could you ever rebuild me a Snickers, right? Knowing all that information, could you make me a Snickers? No. And so there's just not the level of transparency from third-party data sets that allows us to actually build the thing we want to build. So when I say identity, I mean knowing all of the ingredients, where they came from, sourcing them myself, and then ultimately baking that cake.
Okay.
And creating that person. That's the difference, I think.
So I won't give any of those third-party data companies my name, but somebody who's going to offer me something historically, like the in-market auto intender, and maybe at one time 2 years ago I clicked on something having to do with a car contest, and that now qualifies me as being in market for an automobile, right? Maybe that's a terrible, but
no,
maybe also
a
very real description
very real.
Of what's happening out there. So knowing that that was happening once upon a time and unfortunately still continues to happen, how can I as a client expect you to be approaching the identity? Let's use the car example. What can I expect you to give to me now? I think I want somebody who's in the market for a minivan before I was getting this in-market auto intender. What are you offering me today programmatically so you're better setting my expectation and reaching the right type of consumer?
Yeah. So I also won't go into the different partners, but we do have what we call our Agile ID, which is the tie. It's the piece of identity layer that pulls in all the other places. But the idea, it goes back to a bit of transparency and a bit of control. If it's not your data, client one, then where can we get data that looks like your data? Or where can we get data to be appended to your data with a lot of transparency? We call it second party data, right? If it's not your first party data, but it's somebody else's and we connect them somehow through our ID, then that's great. And so we leverage as much second party data as we can, or custom data sets. And custom data sets can be anything from historical based algorithmic buys to knowing the content that someone is actually consuming, right? And I don't mean like the tag on the top of the page that says this is sports content. I mean the actual content within that page and being able to tie that to intent. That's probably the easiest way of thinking about it for us.
Do you still see there being, are you trying to transition a lot of clients away from using some of these more ambiguous sources and turning them more often towards, I would assume, your identity?
We do not buy blind third-party data, and we haven't for a while, for the aforementioned reasons, right? It's just not, it's bad investment, right? It's bad investment to buy blind. So we have made that switch probably a little over a year ago now, if not, like, we've been fully off of it for a little over a year. The one asterisk on this, or the caveat, is purchase-based data. It's not something that can be replicated through context or content. Like, you really do need to go out and get that data set. But at least it's fairly transparent. You know exactly what you're getting, right? Loyalty card, stuff like that.
One thing I imagine a lot of clients found very attractive for a long time, and maybe even a lot of clients today find attractive about third-party data in the programmatic space, is they really think the two go hand in hand, right? I use third-party data. It can very easily be appended to media that I'm going to buy in whatever programmatic media I choose to buy. How do you educate clients, explain to them what it is that you're doing that's going to really help the performance and the purpose of the media by using this new tactic when they historically might have been using third party?
Yeah, I think seeing is believing. You can open up a platform or a console and search for something as simple as like moms with, you know, kids that are this age, right? And suddenly you'll see there's 250 million of them in the US. And you're like, that number seems a little bit high.
Yeah.
Based on just like my own block. is 80% of my block really like, no, it's not. So there's a really easy way of showing clients that, or having them look at their own trackers and find out, you know, this company thinks you're this. I think last time I checked for my own sake, I was like a middle-aged woman with two kids and the household income of like $40,000 a year or something like that.
Right.
That's the easy part of seeing is believing, but you brought up a really good point of performance, and that goes like hand in hand with like, let's define performance as something that drives your business outcome, not something that drives clicks, right? So that one's kind of easy enough as well. We try and put a value metric around our negotiations, right? So curation wise, like there is definitely a reason to go to market and talk to as many publishers as possible. And get as many dollars, as much of the dollar into their hand as possible, like removing ad taxes along the way. There's a lot to be done.
Are you seeing that this new means of executing off of identity is proving out in the way that you intended it to? Like when you're establishing the benefits of utilizing it, that after campaigns are running, you're seeing better metrics and or you're seeing better ROI on the campaigns that clients are investing in?
Yeah, exactly. We are also seeing an evolution of like media mix models where we would focus almost solely on a channel and say like, oh, programmatic is or is not performing. Search is or is not performing. And we're trying to get down to a layer of this content is or is not performing. This publisher, this placement is or is not performing at the macro level. So you can take these very specific nuanced little things and provide that insight relatively quickly instead of waiting for a couple months to go by or a couple weeks to go by before you're like making a change.
Something you just said is that you will do this high level evaluation to say that this quote unquote content is performing or this partner is performing. When you're at this really high level and so many different clients have different goals, like how do you go about doing that comparison to say that they're proving out to bring the value that we expect them to bring when you're just aggregating everything at once at the top?
We can do it in a couple of ways. One, we see everything, right? As the buyer that we are and the platforms that we use, there aren't any auctions out there that we're not seeing, at least, because we have log level access to most of our platforms. And what we're able to do is kind of tie those auction IDs together and look at the people and the segments and the identities that are showing up at those auctions. And so we know in advance, before we spend any money, we know that this person is likely to show up on this page. And then on top of that, we have different value metrics that we can put in it as well, right? So viewability, I think, is like the key value metric, by the way, to say that an ad performed when it wasn't seen is a joke. That actually is probably the biggest hurdle or had been for a couple of years, is saying viewability matters, because the response is, of course, well, why isn't my campaign 100% viewable?
Yeah.
And we're like, well, I think it's a bit of a curse of accountability that digital has had like lurking over it. Your TV buy isn't necessarily 100% viewable, right? There's ghost viewing, right? So the cable box is on, but the screen is off. There's people walking out of the room. There's co-viewing. There's all sorts of stuff that changes like the viewability layer and like a traditional television buy even. But in digital, because it's so mappable and trackable, that accountability layer became like a hindrance on assigning value to viewability. And instead it was, can we game that lever so we get the most performance and use viewability as a as a lever. And so we're trying to get away from that as well and saying, like, let's negotiate on viewability and ensure that, you know, if something is 50% viewable and the CPM is $10, really the viewable CPM is $20, right? So knowing that math in advance and being able to curate, negotiate on that front is incredibly important.
What are other areas that you have found being exceptionally critical to bring to the table for clients to be measuring against that maybe historically they weren't doing in the programmatic space?
Yeah, so each client is different, and some have never had a really great proxy for business performance. You know, maybe they're a cash business and most of their dollars are transacted in cash. So at that point, like purchase-based segmentation that relies on, you know, loyalty cards and people going home and scanning things, maybe that doesn't work so well. But maybe foot traffic is a really good indicator, and we want to make sure we get people to go at like an incremental level, right? So if someone comes, you know, 10 times a week to this place, can we get them to go 11, right? That one, and how much more valuable is that one? Is it really worth spending the money to get them to go that one time? So again, aligning to, it may not be a new form of measurement, but it might be new for that client.
How do you make sure your entire team has access to the best partners that they could be leveraging in the event that, I mean, there's a lot of buyers over there at Omnicom? How do you make sure those learnings are going back to the right parties so that they're leveraging them as part of their buys?
Yeah. So we have a saying of that we are open and neutral. We're open to any partner, right? There's never a time when someone's going to knock on our door and we're going to like draw the blinds and pretend like we're not home. We want to see what's out there as often as possible. And the neutral piece being, we don't really own anything inventory side or tech side that isn't kind of built from the ground up. So the last piece on that, though, for me is like, yeah, we're open and we're absolutely neutral, but we're not agnostic, right? We do have an opinion on things and what we're looking for ultimately. So if you knock on our door, we're still going to ask you the question that we asked the last person that knocked on our door. And we're going to look for differentiation between the two of you. If you don't have something that's unique, we probably won't leverage it. And so the idea is most of our teams know, one, where to go for like the general repository type stuff, right? There's just like a warehouse of information that people have access to the people. So we're building out these teams with a lot of accessibility, and the intent of them is to say like, I'm here to train and educate and be a resource for you. And then just like kind of the standard RFI, RFP process that all agencies and media buying goes through is starting to evolve as well.
So going back to the partner piece, as far as me or anyone ringing the doorbell and you're going to open the door because you want to hear what it is that I have to bring to the table and whether or not it's worthy of consideration, I don't want to say that there are tons of partners that are necessarily selling snake oil, but they might be selling something that sounds too good to be true. And I have to do just a little bit of peeling back to realize, like, actually, I have something basically the equivalent of that from somebody else, or really, again, this is, I think, happening often in the programmatic space. You're selling me something that I'm already getting from someone else. It's identical. And you're trying to put a little bit of gloss on it to suggest that it's something different or it's something proprietary. What do you guys have to do internally in order to uncover and know that you are buying something that is additive and not just more of the same?
We dig deep, but we don't even have to do that all the time. If you have unique inventory, tell me about it. If you have unique data, I would love to see it and hear about it. If you have unique audience that I can't get anywhere else for whatever reason, like, tell me about it. Uniqueness in the way that your platform does its thing that makes it different. Great. I want to know about it. So unique is the key word, like double underline, capital, all bold, italics, different font kind of thing. Like, unique is the word for me.
You said inventory, you said data, and you said audience. So inventory, I think I understand. If you're a unique publisher, you have your own distinct inventory that maybe I otherwise can't have access to. But how are you defining data and how are you defining audience, especially given the conversation we were having earlier about what an audience is?
Yeah. So data in purchase-based targeting, as example, I can't get that anywhere else. There are providers that very much look similar or do things very much the same way, but the data sets themselves, I can only get from them.
Yeah, and they're usually mutually exclusive.
Right. On the audience side or the inside of the audience side, most of your walled gardens have that sort of thing, right? So or they have more than that sort of thing. They have all of it, right? So you can have a partner that has the best intent data on in the world, right? And so you leverage them for that intent data because they know what people are looking for. Or it's an actual producer of a hard product, a hard good, right? So there are televisions out there and screens and manufacturers that have data that we can't get to without them. So there's definitely unique ones out there. A lot of them, actually. A lot more than I ever realized, that is.
What are areas that you're excited to start investing in programmatically moving into 2020, newer areas of consideration that maybe the bulk of your clients have yet to invest in?
I'm lucky, being a part of Omnicom and being in particular part of OMD, that we have very forward-leaning clients. There are not very many new things that are available that they haven't either alpha tested, beta tested, or currently using and leveraging. There is still the opportunity to focus on formats first and think, how do I approach video together, right? How do I make sure that the story we're going to tell with video is the same across all those different places that you can buy video, right? It's not just OTT, CTV, linear television, and like your online video, right? Whatever it falls into OLV, because OLV is in-stream, it's out-stream, it's pre-roll, it's social. Like, the video shows up in a lot of spaces now. And if you're going to market to tell a story through video, how can you possibly plan those things in silos or even consider them channels, right? It should be format focused. So video, audio, custom, maybe some local in there, stuff like that.
Are there any areas and or area that you find particularly exciting, even if you know that your clients have tested everything under the sun?
Yeah. I'm not the only one, but I'm very excited to see what 5G does. I've been told that the promise of 5G is kind of like, it's not the same step between 3 and 4. It is a significant game changer in what type of, and at the speed at which you can collect data and understand like what's really happening with the consumer. So that's what I'm most excited about.
Resources are abundant at Omnicom by comparison to a lot of people who are doing media buying, but inevitably there are still challenges that you're facing. So what are some problem areas that are just industry-wide that you're excited maybe to tackle because there isn't a solution in place, but maybe you're working on something to help address those things for clients or better address those things for clients?
Yeah, I think measurement is something that I don't own at all. We have an entire marketing sciences department dedicated to kind of thinking about that. But I think something that runs parallel to measurement is the idea of what is a client ultimately in-house, right? Because they really own the measurement and the performance of their business. And so they start to think about what are the things that we could take in that are really kind of ultimately tied back to getting us better measurement. So I actually want to help clients do that as often as possible, where there's probably like this weird gray area where people think like, why on earth would you try and help a client in-house what you do? And the idea is what I do is significantly evolved from what it once was, first and foremost. So I'm not really concerned about that, or maybe I'm self-sabotaging. I don't know. But I genuinely believe that if you can give more transparency and more access to your clients around the things that historically had been out of reach for them, you will just prove yourself that much more valuable. So being really proactive and going to our clients and saying like, what can we help you with? What can we give you access to that maybe we didn't even know you wanted in the past?
Are there things that clients have tipped off that they are interested in accessing that they currently don't have access to?
Yeah, I mean, historically, all of your buying platforms, whether that was a traditional IO system or a programmatic DSP, like they really didn't have a need to have access to those things. And I think now that we're seeing how much more impactful those things are and the data that sits within them, there's a real hunger to say, can I just see it? And so we're like, of course you can. Here are the keys. Don't crash it.
Yeah.
You know, which of course we have things in place to help them not crash it. Whether we're riding shotgun or just putting a training wheels on it, but yeah.
You just mentioned in-housing, and obviously that's been a trend that's been around for a couple of years, bringing programmatic buying in-house. Are you seeing a lot of clients sometimes making the jump, I'm saying jump almost with air quotes, because if it's a jump or it's a step or if it's a crawl in that direction. Sometimes I imagine some clients end up backpedaling. And the reason why I bring that up is to say, how have you been maybe coaching clients to realize there's a lot of value that comes with working with a large agency that isn't so easy to take on yourself? How do you address those kinds of things?
Openly and honestly, showing the work that's happening outside of those consoles, reminding people it's not set it and forget it. It's not easy though. I'm dead, like it's hard work, which is kind of why I want to do it. I hate stagnation. I don't want to just sit around and like rest on our laurels. Like I want to be pushing our own team to say like, okay, like what can we do better if a client takes contracts in-house? Or what does it mean to take something in-house? What are you taking in-house? Yeah. Is it access that you need to have? Is it actual contract ownership that you need to have? Is it the buying team that you want? Do you want them to actually just to sit near you so they're a bit closer to you? Like there's all these nuances to in-housing. And so I think if we're not having and forcing that conversation in a really proactive and engaging manner, then we're just kind of concerned and worried about what that means. And so I think we just pulled back the curtain on it and said like, okay, everyone wants to do something like this because you saw somebody else in Adweek say they did it. Well, we know what they actually did. Let's talk about what they did. And let's talk about what you want. Like, do you want to do it just so your name can be on the front cover? Or do you want to do it because it's the best thing for your business? And if it's the best thing for your business, tell us what it is and we'll help you do it.
And I imagine there's a lot of cases where it's more of a hybrid situation. We're back to the point that you made. What are you bringing in-house? And some things, maybe it's practical in some instances for you to bring some things in-house. And there are other things that continue to make sense to lean on an agency for.
Yeah.
So I imagine you are having a lot of those kinds of conversations. Something you also brought up, and I just want to make sure we address it, is this concept of set it and forget it, and how that is not only a massive misconception, but that there are a lot of nuances to the actual work, the art of programmatic buying. So can we talk a little bit, or can you expand on why it is not set it and forget it?
Do you know where that phrase came from, set it and forget it?
I feel like it came from some sort of like 90s infomercial.
It did. This guy named Ron Popeil. And it was about like basically like anything you wanted to cook inside of this crazy induction oven, you could just set it and forget it. And I think if you remind people that's where it came from and say like you can set it and forget it and have that like rubber chicken pop out of the oven, or you can go to a really good restaurant and know that chef knows exactly what they're doing and has the best ingredients in the world and can get it to you in a way that nobody else can, it's kind of the same thing. We are really good at what we do. I should say the people who I work with are really good at what they do. I'm humbled every day by somebody inside of this organization and what they're capable of. And it's at all levels. So,
yeah. Like, what's a good example of something where people aren't understanding the complexity? It's not just a person who's pressing two buttons behind a screen. Like, what is some of that complexity that's actually happening that a client can expect a media buyer who's working on their behalf to actually be doing when they're leveraging the services of Omnicom?
Yeah. So one, we go back to transparency, and we show clients a lot of what's happening in the console, right? We'll open it up for them and say, look at every single one of these lines that someone had to build to begin with, right? Look at every single one of these optimizations and changes that are happening. We have the logs for it. We can show you like this isn't happening at an algorithmic level. This is a person making those changes.
Do you think that there's that understanding that that's a distinction, that this is a person doing this, and you can really clarify that this was a human versus, well, doesn't the AI technology stuff do that?
Yeah, and some do. Some want the AI, right? They want that shiny new object. And so we're constantly reminding our clients that we will use and leverage the AI to its maximum potential. Algorithms, machines give you data and facts. People give you insights. And so it's been rather easy to show those differences. And once you get people thinking beyond those KPIs of performance and seeing the media for what it is, marketing, it's not as difficult as it probably seems from the outside. So we show everything we can. We have processes in place that obviously can't happen through a machine. And we we make sure that our clients know who those people are, right? So they can say like, oh, great. I'm glad Tommy's in the room today or on the call today, right? Not just like, what's the programmatic team doing today?
Yeah. Does that gathering of insights also fall on members of your team, or does that transfer over to another team?
Falls on every team. There isn't a single person in the organization that doesn't have some level of remit to say, like, you need to be able to pull an insight out of what you're doing.
I think what I mean more so is that, like, on an ongoing basis, if I am a programmatic media buyer and I'm working underneath the programmatic team, mm-hmm. what is my responsibility as far as doing those ongoing optimizations and ensuring I'm getting the best out of the partnerships that we're leveraging from a programmatic standpoint? And now, what role do I play in sharing that back with the client in a way that's easy for them to digest?
Yeah, I work good in specifics, so I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We have a client buying a mobile campaign, right? Something that you're probably familiar with. And what ends up happening is if you trust the algorithm to do its job and you've given it basically one of those performance KPIs to go out and do, it'll continue to ratchet up the spend against the thing that's quote unquote performing. But what you end up doing is inflating costs significantly. And so you've got to break out these different buckets of bids to say, like, this is really worth this, and that's the maximum that it's worth because I was getting performance at that number in the past. So the team to be able to see that and understand those changes and why they're making those changes is in and of itself insightful. And so they can raise that to the client and say, look, we've been showing you that this publisher is performing really well for you, but the platform decided that it was more valuable than we deemed it really was. And so here's a change that I made to make sure that we're investing properly.
This is going back to something we spoke to a little bit earlier, but now with consideration for programmatic buying and the insights that can be gathered, even in terms of improving, what do I want to describe it as, like best in class tactics or techniques for buying. I feel like people are learning new things every day. How do you share best practices internally so they can be leveraged across the broad swath of clients that you work with?
Yeah, so we have a division dedicated to it, learning and development. Sits within OMG, and we use as much of that team as possible. We have our own L&D platform that houses all the information you could ever think about, and every single partner in the world is in there. And then we have like standing meetings, right? So there's some things that just can't be done by a machine that we have to have people for in a conversation, and there are really no judgment zones, right? So come in, I want to learn from you just as much as you want to learn from me, and we're going to update you every week on this. And that's it. Like, there's no secret sauce to being open and communicating. Like, that's it.
What are the qualities of an excellent programmatic media buyer?
Analytical, obviously. We want people to be inquisitive, right? So when they see something that maybe doesn't quite add up, or they can kind of matrix it and see the outliers, and suddenly they're like, wait a minute, something here isn't quite right. It's in their nature to go digging, you know, to be sleuths. That's a good programmatic buyer. Everything else can be kind of taught.
What's an example of me being analytical? Because I think a lot of people could be on a broad spectrum of calling themselves the same thing, and one person is far more analytical based on your rating system versus somebody else. So give me an example of somebody who's doing the job in the way that's going to be of maximum benefit to the client.
Yeah. So if you think about like a Wall Street trader, which we started with the word trader earlier, a Wall Street trader has a lot of pressure to spend money in a really great way. Unfortunately for a Wall Street trader, they have to do it all at once, right? I'm going to invest $1 million into this company, and it's done like that. For a programmatic trader, they have the benefit of time. They have a campaign length, they have a start and a stop date, and sometimes it doesn't do either of those things. It's just always on. But because of that, they've got the opportunity to look at every single like minute detail as often as they possibly can. So when I say analytical, I mean they take the time all day, every day, to explore as many outcomes as are possible from all the levers they have in their toolbox. Really, you have two levers, right? On, off, more or less. But knowing that those levers exist in like mass, right? They happen everywhere and anywhere, whether it's a supply source, maybe it's a path that is performing better than the other for the exact same piece of inventory. It could be an audience that's underperforming. Why are they underperforming? And it's just like, how low can you go and how much time can you spend exploring the multiple outcomes. That's right. Analytical.
And ultimately, that same person is still tasked with making sure all the media that they're tasked with buying is being bought. So wearing multiple hats and taking on multiple responsibilities. So specifically referring to the fact that you said you like to build relationships and it's exceptionally important to build those and maintain those. Obviously, every client isn't happy all of the time. So some of that is going to be tied to, let's say, programmatic media performance and maybe other things that extend beyond performance. What have you learned in your last couple of years overseeing a programmatic team that have been important learnings to share back with clients and how you serve them and build those relationships?
Oh, that's a really good question. I used to never be wrong, by the way, if you didn't know. And now I'm wrong all the time.
All the time.
All the time.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to like be wrong because you can learn from it. And previously, I couldn't learn from being wrong. I would just get frustrated with it and be like, why didn't they see it that my way? Instead, now it's like, okay, I'm clearly wrong in this. Why am I wrong? What did we do wrong?
Why did that realization strike you? In terms of like, what was it that happened that led you to understand that you're not always right? And now you have an appreciation from learning and growing.
I think it came from clients that were maybe not happy, right? And being the guy inside of this thing that's so, so very important to the industry and to our company and to our offering, I am always on that front line. And I will never let someone who works for me be like the scapegoat on those things. Like if something goes wrong, it's on me to fix. And so that's very humbling to be wrong in that way, because it's real money. They're real businesses with real goals. And when they're not meeting them and it's something that we can control and impact, I own it. I absolutely own it. And our teams own it. Like as much as I want to say like, yeah, this is my problem, my fault. Like the collective agency goes back to that client and says like, here's what we can do to be better. And we want to hear out from you, like where we went astray.
Are there any best practices, like caveats you should be bringing up from the get-go in order to manage client expectations or areas where things can, maybe in the eyes of the client, go wrong and or, I'm using air quotes to say go wrong, maybe it's not aligning in the direction of what they thought their intended interest was, but there's a legitimate reason for why that's taken place. How do you manage those kinds of things?
I think part of being good at what you do is being able to explain that before it happens, right? So if you have the opportunity to set expectations and own expectations, you should take it. And if you leave something on the table and that's the thing that goes astray, like shame on you for leaving it on the table.
Luke, I know we talked about a lot of different things, and I said maybe four questions ago it was the last question, but I very much appreciate you making time in your busy day to have this conversation about media investment and a lot of the cool things that are happening over at Omnicom.
It was awesome to catch up, and I'm glad I could share this.
Thanks to Luke Lambert, head of programmatic at OMD, for sharing his insights on buying your media programmatically the best way you possibly can. I completely agree with Luke. In today's landscape, if there is a way to buy media programmatically, then that's the right way to go about doing it. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to AdTech Unfiltered on Apple Podcasts or the podcasting app of your choosing. Until then, this is Noor Nasir. We'll catch you on our next episode.